Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Boston prides itself on being prosperous and progressive. So why are white people the ones disproportionately prospering, and what barriers to prosperity does the city put before Black Bostonians? Those are questions at the center of a new documentary film, A Reckoning in Boston. The film is streaming as part of the Independent Film Festival Boston from Friday until Sunday. And joining us now to talk more about it are Coffee Dixon, who is a producer and whose story is one of those told through the film, and filmmaker James Rutenbeck. Coffee, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And James, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So, Coffee, I'm going to start with you. The film follows you on your quest to start a farm in Boston. And folks listening out there haven't had a chance to see the film. So I want them to understand it's not just a quest. It's a saga. It's an odyssey. Let's go back to the beginning of it. When did you first decide that this was something that you wanted to do? And how did you start?
I was a business owner here in Boston. I had opened a produce market called Milk and Honey Produce Market. And because of politics within themselves, that produce market in Ashmont Station, Dorchester, was closed down. And I started thinking about what my safety and my life and my well-being in Boston looked like, and what it looked like for other women of color. And I decided to, leave Boston and go to Vermont to start a rural farming enterprise. But in looking at my privilege and being able to say I'm ready to leave as a working class woman in Boston, I realized that a lot of women who I grew up with and were friends with and in my community did not have that same privilege. I then started thinking of creating something for them here in Boston and providing them access to urban farming in the spirit of what the Menino administration thought it would be for communities in the allowance of Article 89 zoning for urban farming here in Boston. I just began to bring the women together.
We're going to talk more about what unfolded after that and sort of how you talk about what safety is in the film, Coffee, but I want to bring James's voice in here for a minute. James, Coffee's journey is riveting, but it's not necessarily what you started out with when you set out to make a documentary, is it?
No, not at all. I started out in 2014 at Codman Square Health Center, where the Clemente course in the humanities takes place. That's a tuition-free night course in the humanities. It's a rigorous course that's free for community members. It's taught by professors from Harvard, Boston College. It's a rigorous course, and students who get through it get 6 credits from Bard College. I had heard a Clemente graduate speak at a benefit dinner, a mass humanities benefit dinner, and was very moved by what she said about her experience there and how it led to this new life trajectory for her. And at the time I thought, well, this could be, you know, really compelling, possibly film idea. So in 2014, I met Jack Chang, who's the director of the Clemente, Dorchester Clemente course. There are 34 Clemente courses in sites all over the United States. But Dorchester was close to me. I live in the western suburbs. I know a lot of filmmakers in Boston. And I thought a kind of collaboration to tell the story of this experience of transformation through engagement with art, history, literature, and philosophy could make for a really interesting nonfiction film.
So how did you settle on telling this story of Coffee trying to bring Black women to the land and land to Black women for ownership and safety and food growth?
Right. So I always thought that the film would need some kind of context. Like the Clemente students bring their life experience and lived experience into these really interesting conversations about Socrates and about, you know, Picasso. And so it's not like an undergraduate college. It's a whole different kind of learning experience. And I thought that that piece would be enough, but I always knew that the film would need a kind of context about the lives of the students. And so I started spending some time with two of the students, Coffee and Carl Chandler, who's another character in the film, and got to know them. And the more time I spent with them, the more compelling I found their stories, and the more I wanted to incorporate their life experience into the film itself. And that's what sort of led to these complications, at least for me as a filmmaker, because I realized at a certain point, as I witness evictions, housing court, welfare agencies, the day-to-day obstacles and the chaos and calm persistence of the lives of these people, that as a white guy from the suburbs, I was not really equipped to mediate their stories. And so at a certain point, we shifted a bit and pivoted, and I brought Coffee and Carl in as producers with me contractually, with a share in the film revenues, because I felt I was spending so much time with them and had become so dependent on their counsel to really understand their stories that it was sort of, you know, it was ethically the right thing to do. So there was a third piece. Yeah. Okay. I'll hold that thought. There was a sort of a third piece that happened later too.
No. So let me bring back Coffee and then we'll work in that third piece, because Coffee, there's a million questions I want to ask you. I want to know, once you became a producer, does this film tell your story? Is this the story about you want told? And what do you think that story is?
The story is a story. It's not just my story. And I'm thankful for that. And it wasn't just Carl's story. It's a story of a community of African-American and Indigenous people who's rarely seen their experiences, although maybe documented in research or in, you know, Boston indicator statistics or in the healthcare field as far as morbidity and mortality, and in the Race in Boston series. It hasn't been visually documented, right? So in working with James, the story is not just of my story, it's the experiences of an African-American community, Black and Brown folks here in what we believe is a progressive city, right? And I believe that story is told accurately, that James was able to be a neutral witness and to tell the story and to support us in helping not just him, but the audience around the subject matters.
I'm gonna stay with you now for a minute. As I began to really feel like I was getting to know you in the film, it was when you started talking about your history with Thompson Island and Boston Harbor. Here's a little bit of how you describe it in the film.
So, I have nobody to talk to. And I'm always going back to this place called Thompson's Island.
Definitely that and some other experiences are why I always go to land for peace. Mm-hmm. Like, you literally went out there and felt safe. And my big thing was the healing power of safe spaces.
So then you take this vacant piece of land and a group of other Black and Brown women and you begin to work that land. It belongs to the city. You begin to work it. And you try to get the city to authorize it and give you legit sort of permanent access. And it is just roadblock after roadblock. So was your city saying, we don't want you to feel safe? We don't want to give you the healing power of a safe space?
You know, a lot of this documentary is fascinating because it's not necessarily about racism. That is a pillar in the systemic and structural violence that we experience. But a lot of it is really about what's going on nationally, which is misunderstanding the voices of Black and Brown people and their needs, right? Either marginalizing those voices or using a power and privilege or heroicism to decide that a community that is not of that socioeconomic community, that race, that culture, can better define and design our communities. The interesting thing about talking about safe space and me with Tolga constantly referencing when we felt safe is
Tolga being another woman, excuse me, Tolga being another woman in the documentary who's a longtime friend of yours. Sorry, go
ahead. Yeah. You know, I talk about and trying to look for understanding or explain, you know, what it was for safe space for us, what I was trying to do by not asking the city initially for land, but taking land, not for myself, but for the women, right? Because my vision was to go to Vermont or Western Mass and take my savings and buy land and farm as experienced farmer, as a rural farmer, right? But I was trying to create safe space for them where I knew I could find it, but I didn't know in the oppression that Black women experience in Boston if they could find it for themselves. So I came in as an advocate and shared experiences. And it was challenging. And it had been challenging, and James experienced those challenges, and a lot of people who were not women of color, who were not impoverished, you know, who did not understand the intersectionality of being a Black woman. The saga began to explain to them or try to justify why we needed safe space. And to be vulnerable, not just to the camera, but to, you know, the powers that be about what violence looks like to us, what the murders of our sons, our daughters, our children's fathers, our husbands, the incarceration of ourselves, our bodies and the bodies of men, the socioeconomic class, the lack of in inclusive integration into, you know, economic development, business development, neighborhood development, right? As individuals, how all of that violence demanded, at least in my perspective, a need for safe space for women who are like me.
I'm going to turn back to you now, James, in hearing Coffee talk about the experiences of Black women. You also have Carl Chandler as the other story that you tell. Carl is a Black man, and at one point he is facing eviction. Here is a little bit of Carl talking about that after he was told by his landlord that she wanted to sell his building and he would be facing eviction. Here we go.
My landlady said, you've been a great tenant. You know, everything that a tenant is supposed to do, you've done. I want to sell. And I said, okay, well, how much time? And she said, well, 2-3 days. And I'm thinking, this is a nightmare.
And James, it's one of many times in the story where you are confronted with the reality that Coffee, that Carl, that Tolga, that others just have the rug pulled out under them or are just stopped in their tracks in ways that you never are. And excuse me, I do want to go back. The producers are reminding me that Carl identifies as Black, Indigenous American, and Western European. I want to be respectful of how Carl self-identifies. You learn your own lesson about their experience in this community and yours.
Yeah, definitely. What I really learned was, you know, as a suburban white man living in the suburbs, just 8 miles from Coffee and Carl, there's really like a parallel society in a way. And there's so much that is hidden from people like me. Like we don't, like the chaos of housing court, for example, like that's something that I had never seen before. You know, there were dozens of families there, mostly people of color with no legal support to speak of, who were facing eviction. And I saw it at the welfare agency with coffee when there were women there who were trying to learn how to be their own paralegals in a way, and just to figure out how the system could work for them, because they were facing losing Section 8 certificates. And all this, you know, I began to understand my privilege. And part of privilege is being protected from all of that. And not only not experiencing it, but not even having to see it or witness it. And I think that was a turning point for me, because I had developed a relationship at this point, after 5+ years of filmmaking, with Coffee and Carl, and we are friends. And when you see your friends put into these kinds of situations, it requires a response. I could no longer just be the observational filmmaker. I realized that I had some skin in the game, and I had to be part of it. I was part of the story as well.
So Coffee, I'm going to come to you now, and I'm mindful of time. We'll only have a moment for you to answer, but we fast forward, you have the land now, you're farming it. Go ahead.
Go finish your question. I'm sorry.
Well, do you feel safe, and do the women who are working with you feel safe? And again, just a sentence or two. I'm sorry that we're out of time.
No problem. Not necessarily. We still don't have equity in this land. We are developing. We are doing community design, but we're still raising funds. We're still searching for co-op solidarity members to our co-op. And we're still looking for that to make this project foundational, to own the land so that the space can continue to exist past my time here in this community. It's the start, right? But we still have a long way to go to talk about safety for the majority of Black and brown women here in our city.
That is Coffee Dixon and James Rutenbeck, producer and filmmaker on A Reckoning in Boston, which is streaming as part of the Independent Film Festival Boston from Friday until Sunday. Thank you so much to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tatiana. Thank you so much.